All right, this is Pure Decking for Thursday, April the 14th, 2016. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like our current police state, information security, and accepting the fact that this is what my life has become. I'm Warps, and tonight I have Madman, and are you? I am currently drinking Newcastle. Are you?
Yeah.
Manly enough for you.
That'll do. Newcastle Brown? Yeah, it's the bottle that comes with the label, stitch this Jimmy after you smash it over their face.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
What are you drinking?
Me? I've got a large glass of water, but I found the pills that my wife hides from me because she thinks I'm a degenerate drug addict and will just take everything in the house. So I'm currently a little bit drowsy and have a resting heart rate of 1.
If they're estrogen pills, you're also going to have cancer, just like...
Oh, he's some sort of, like, fucking sedative for panic attacks. I thought I'd give that a go today, you know, got nothing else going on. Try some random tablets.
I'm bored. I found something vaguely pill-shaped. I'm just going
to... I know I'm a degenerate. I've accepted it. You've realized where your life is at. You've accepted it. Can we just fucking move on now? The name calling or arrest.
Madman, what are you drinking, and are you happy with where your life currently is?
I'm drinking Four Roses, and I deal with stupid people all day, so no. But I do have random bottles of Loratap. At least I know what pills I've got in my house. I haven't dropped that low. And muscle relaxers. Loratabs and muscle relaxers.
Yeah, I like to put them all in a big bag so it looks like I'm eating childhood candies.
Now, I did suggest that once to a pharmacist to boost sales in his department. I wasn't allowed in the pharmacy for a while and not allowed to make suggestions at corporate meetings.
Totally different reason why I'm banned from the pharmacy.
All right, man, you got to elaborate on this story.
It was back when I was a support manager. We were going over different department sales figures and trying to come up with ideas on how to improve them. And the pharmacy sales were down, but you can't really push pharmaceutical products. If you need something that's over the counter, people will come in and buy it. There's not a, hey, let's go buy allergy medication outside of allergy season. So I suggested the prescription grab bag. We'll just take a bunch of random pills, put them in the little pharmacy bag, staple them shut. You might be buying Loratabs. You might be getting children's vitamins. You don't know until you buy them, and all sales are final.
God damn it. Oh, that's awesome, man. How America became addicted.
What do you do? You don't look in the bag. You just open it and take a swig.
Turn all it back. You gotta do is wait 45 minutes for results to see whether you got lucky.
You go back to the pharmacy 45 minutes later. I'm pissing blood.
Do you know the numbers and letters on the pills that you were taking?
No, we were doing the blind shot.
Bad news. You might die.
So
glad you signed that waiver form now.
Yeah, the grab bag has all the releases printed on it.
Bring your list of symptoms. Yes.
Yes. All right. So let's get into the discussion here. Damn putty window. That. And here's the first link for this. So I first came across this not as a article, but as a post somebody was posting for help a couple days ago. The guy goes on server fault, posts, I run a small hosting provider with more or less 1,500 customers. And I use Ansible to automate some operations that to be run on all servers. Last night, I accidentally ran on all servers a bash script with rm-rf foo/bar With those variables undefined due to a bug in the code above this line, all the servers got deleted and the offsite backups too, because the remote storage was mounted just before by the same script. It's a backup maintenance script. So how can I recover from rm-rf slash in a timely manner?
Yeah, I would think anything with a line of code that says FUBAR, like fucked up beyond recognition, wouldn't be a bad thing, right?
Yeah.
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 This man really needs to assess his life at this point.
So here's the thing. For anybody who's not versed in their bash command line, rm-rf slash is the Windows equivalent of format C colon. it tells the command interpreter to delete everything. And so, and apparently in the same script, Captain Intelligence here mounted all of his backup arrays and rm-rf star. It's like, what the hell? And what's even funnier is there are no actual suggestions in the server fault. At least when I first read it, there were like 8 posts. There's like 135 upvotes on the answer now. Looks like a lot more posts, and then they locked it. But nobody's actually got any suggestions. They're like, well, this is why you do backups. This is why you do testing on a server first. This is why you do this. And, you know, nobody's actually talking about that, well, if you were smart and shut down everything right after it happened, you might be able to go in there a test disk and start getting some of your files back. Recovering entire Unix file systems may not be all that possible, but you could at least get your customer data, right? And hope that...
If they're virtual servers, would that still work?
It depends on how they're set up. I'm guessing not. Because of the way he was talking about mounting other things. But, yeah, if there were virtual servers and you had set up snapshotting, yeah, you could just roll back a snapshot. But he said he wiped out his backups, too, with this thing. So,
wow.
Obviously, because it's a slow news day, the independent.co.uk picked up the story and wrote it up. And it says, a man appears to have deleted his entire company with one mistaken piece of code. Actually, most of the discussion I saw about this before it was picked up as a news story was wondering if it was somebody trolling, because there were a lot of people who was picking apart the bash he posted, saying, well, these variables shouldn't quite evaluate like that, or wouldn't normally, and blah, 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 you know, arguing back and forth on whether or not it was like a troll or something. But by accidentally telling his computer to delete everything in his servers, hosting provider... Oh, they called him. They got his name, or is that the name in the post? By Bleem Boy. No, they must have contacted the guy, because that's not the answer. The question he used. They said apparently hosting provider Marco Marsala has seemingly removed all traces of his company and the websites he looks after for his customers. Mr. Marsala wrote on a forum.
There was his second mistake. Using his real fucking name.
Well, he didn't use it on server fault. I bet the reporter reached out to him and he gave it to him. So,
I stand by my claim. Second mistake.
Yeah.
Yeah, because if he was able to retrieve this, his customers wouldn't have known he fucked up and wouldn't be so worried that they would take their business elsewhere.
So, yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, Mehmet.
Let's say he could have... you know, learned from his mistakes and recovered, but if I find out, oh, my server provider just deleted all of my shit, I'm not going to risk a game over situation by staying with them.
Well, we've had that happen before with some of the early G15 stuff, remember?
Yeah.
We had broadcast boxes, some of the virtual ones just wiped out and gone. You know, we logged in one day and it was just gone. Find out the hosting provider deleted everything because the server got fucked up, and they said, yeah, sorry, you should have had backups. Damn. So.
Like, that's why we hired you. You should have backups.
Well, it was a pretty cheap operation. Yeah. I remember Sard getting really upset. It's like, doesn't this go against SLA? Aren't they supposed to tell you what they're doing? It's like, no, dude, This isn't a professional services contract. This is some asshole on the internet.
We had backups. Start getting
really upset when that happened.
Well, only after the third time.
Yeah, well. Some of the more outstanding quotes from the Serverfault post here, people responding. It would be extremely expensive and still extremely unlikely to really rescue you, and will take a lot of time, because they were talking about sending it off to data recovery. Others agreed that perhaps Mr. Masala was on the wrong forum. You're going out of business, wrote Michael Hampton. You don't need technical advice, you need a lawyer. Yeah, and most people were pointing out things he should have done before nuking his hard drives. So...
have a test environment for your code before you deploy it?
Absolutely. If you write code, anybody who writes code knows this, you almost never get it right on the first try. You never get it right on the first try. Either you've got a typo in it, or you've missed a line, or you've gotten a piece of logic wrong. I mean,
lines of code, 27 errors.
Basically, yeah. I mean, it's... yeah, you miss a semicolon somewhere, or you put a space where there shouldn't have been a space, or my personal favorite, when you're working in Python and you've accidentally used three spaces instead of two to indent things, and you get weird blocks. So, and even worse, anybody who's coded for a length of time knows, the worst errors are the ones that don't cause the program to fail, but cause it to do something wrong, like this guy just learned, where Bash didn't come out and say syntax error, Bash deleted his hard drive. So, yeah, this is why people build test environments. This is why you check and triple check your code over and over again. This is why if you use they're Mac, they give me shit in the chat room. Use tab, morps. Well, you know, editing shit. Anyways, But to the point, you get into a practice, you develop standards, you stick to them, and if you've got to work by yourself, well, that's one thing. But if you have a team, there's absolutely no shame. I mean, I do this a lot. I know a lot of other people I work with do this. It's like, hey, dude, I'm getting ready to do this. You want to double check my work? There's no shame in asking somebody else to look over your shit before you, especially if you're going to touch customer data. Or production servers, or I mean, I guess it goes against the badass hacker ethic, but yeah, it isn't worth the time. It's like, nah, have somebody else glance at your code. It's just like proofreading your own writing. Everyone sucks at proofreading their own writing.
You read what you intended to write, not what's actually there.
Exactly. So there's no shame in saying, hey, here's a script I'm getting ready to fire on the server. You want to give this a glance before I do it? Dude, you're going to delete your shit, right?
that's what you're heading for here? Then go right ahead and execute.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, go ahead and run that on a server you don't care about. So,
good news, if we ever get audited and don't want everything to show up, you've written the correct script.
I don't know. Anybody else? Madman, you got anything on this? Are you? Want to move on?
Is there a practical way other than just sending your hard disk off for data recovery?
Well, sending your hard disk off for data recovery is probably going to be the most expedient. The problem comes in that it depends on what you've done right after you ran the command. Because I guess it depends on whether any
of the sectors have already been written to or anything like that.
Well, generally, when a computer deletes something in the operating system, it doesn't actually delete it. It goes in and tells the file system, tells the hard disk, this space is no longer allocated. So the file is still there. It's just been removed from the file allocation tables. So, the data is still on the disk. There's just no pointer showing that this is a file in the table that tells the disk what all's on it. So, yeah, what I was going to say is if right after you ran this command, if you went in and used something like test disk or photorec, you might be able to recover most of the files. There's plenty of undelete programs for Windows that basically do the same thing. But if you, then fucked around with it or started trying to write to it, there's no real telling where the disk is going to write to and what it's going to overwrite. So, yeah, your best bet is, if you realize what you've done, would be to shut everything down. Actually, if you have the drives to do it, DD, take a full-on image of everything, of the actual drives. You may not have the space for this, so especially if you're doing a data center, right? But you take a full image dump, and then you do things like test disk and photo rec on the image dump to try to get it back. That way the original disks are like off and sealed and not written to, and that way you don't have to. It's much less likely that they'll be damaged, and if it comes to it, you could send them off to a drive recovery and maybe get your data back. Again, it just depends on how long were you running it after you told it to delete it. Two, is your disk set to do secure deletes? Because disk firmwares, you can do what's called a secure wipe, which goes through and writes noise to the disk. So, I don't know.
If it's a virtual server, you're probably just fucked.
Well, maybe. I mean, it comes down to what kind of virtual machine you're using. If you're using a desktop virtual machine, yeah, it probably is, because that image file is just a file floating around the hard disk, and they're usually what's called thin provisioned, which means it doesn't actually use the space on the disk until you've started writing space on the disk. So if you say, I have a 20 gigabyte virtual machine, but it's thin provisioned, you install the operating system. The operating system for average Linux installs a couple gig. Full Linux install. I mean, if you're just on a console or whatever, you can get away with a couple of meg. But you'll see the image file is only as big as the space you've actually used. Now, some virtual machines will try to reclaim that space over time. Others won't. Yeah, that gets messy quick. If you're using something like a hypervisor that's working off physical partitions that have been shared with the virtual machine, then that's different. If you're on some kind of a SAN, data recovery on a SAN gets weird, because usually the SANs format the arrays differently and the disks all have to be in the same order. So you have to kind of treat the whole thing as one giant disk. That gets to be a headache quick. And those you have to basically send off to data recovery and hope for the best.
You hear the story, Static?
No. What's up?
Well, I guess Static's just going to crash the show here.
Hey, you told me to last week, so I'm just going off what you said.
I did. I don't remember telling you that last week.
Yeah, you said if I had something to say.
Well, dude mistakenly wrote code that deleted his servers. He's running a server farm, pretty much.
Wow. What a moron.
That's pretty much what everybody's saying about the poor guy, but...
Especially if you didn't have backups, I mean.
Oh, that's the thing. There's the server fault post. That'll get you the gist of it. Is the same script that had a typo in it that evaluated a bunch of variables down to rm-rf*? also mounted as backup partitions.
He didn't have off-site backups?
Apparently not.
And he's running something for customers.
Again, apparently not.
Again, moron. Wow. That's awesome, though. How did it mount his backups? That's what I want to know.
He just said his bash script, all the servers got deleted, and the offsite backups, too, because the and the offsite backups, too.
And the
they were offsite. Because the remote storage was mounted just before by the same script. This is supposed to be a backup maintenance script.
Hey, I give him credit. At least he's made his life easy as far as automating stuff. However, it screwed him.
I believe that's what's called a career limiting move.
Yeah. Good luck. That's all I gotta say.
All right, then, Static. If you're gonna crash the show, what are you drinking, and are you happy with where your life has ended?
Wait. Last one. Okay, I was about to say my life ended. When?
We're gonna kill you at the end of this show. That's all. Oh, God. That's what he's saying.
Well, okay. I'm not drinking anything because I just came off a motorcycle ride, 40 miles. So this is a really nice night. That's why I was late. But I do have what's left of the rum in front of me that I was drinking last night, so I might finish that in a minute.
You sound rather hyper compared to usual. So
I'm a little bit more awake right now, so yeah.
Yeah, doing a motorcycle ride will wake you up, especially at night.
It's fun going over hills and then all of a sudden, oh, there's a car. Holy crap, get in my lane.
You should have been in your lane. I want to point out, you should have been in your lane.
I was going around a curve.
In your lane?
I was in my lane. I was close to the line, but I was in my lane. Okay. Getting more in my lane, let's put it that way.
More. No, this is a binary. You are either in your lane or you are out of your lane. If any part of your bike is out of your lane, you are out of your lane, sir.
Getting further over in my lane. How about that?
Just redefine terms here a little bit.
Next story. Rocket Snail.
Wait a minute. Is somebody else trying to call Rocket Snail?
Yes. Because you're calling me out, so I'm moving it on.
Interesting. Alright, so first real news story I have is from Ars Technica. Apparently Underwriter Labs, these are the people who test electronic devices and put their little seal of a label of approval on your Christmas lights. Here, let me just read from the article. Under UL, the 122-year-old safety standards organization, whose various marks, UL, ENEC, etc., certify minimum safety standards in fields as diverse as electrical wiring, cleaning products, and even dietary supplements. I did not know they tested dietary supplements. How do you test that?
Did you die?
We gave the intern, were you able we to gave digest the, intern it? The blue pills. We gave the other intern the green pills, and we gave the last intern the purple pills. The first intern didn't do anything. The second intern turned gay, and the third intern grew a tail.
It's safe for the market.
It's safe for the market.
Was it listed as a side effect?
May turn gay. I mean,
not a side effect. It's a feature.
Yeah, so you got one that stayed straight, got one that turned gay, and you got one that became a furry. Got it.
Wow.
So this is a pill we're marketing to either Tumblr or 4chan.
My Bernie's, dude.
Or both. Okay. So UL is now tackling the cybersecurity of the Internet of Things devices with its UL 2900 certificate. Really? 2900? Didn't anybody tell them it should have been 2600? The UL 2600 certification? I mean, come on. Okay, the UL 2900 certification. There's a problem. UL is refusing to freely share the text of the new standard with security researchers, wondering if UL actually knows what they're doing. So... Ars has requested a copy of the UL 2900 documents to take a closer look at the standard, and UL, formerly known as Underwriters Laboratories, declined, indicating that if we wish to purchase a copy, retail price is around $800, we were welcome to do so. Independent security researchers are also, we must assume, welcome to become UL retail customers. So, what they've done is they're, you know, everybody knows Underwriter Laboratories, or UL. They've put together a Internet of Things cybersecurity standard, but they're not letting anybody else look at it. They're saying, no, this is our standard. If you'd like to know what's in it, you have to buy it.
But to know whether or not it's secure, I need to know what your standard is. If standard is it won't shoot everything out in plain text, but that's it, is that necessarily secure? Or I personally guarantee Madman won't go to your house and kick you in the dick. That's not really going to help with internet security, especially if you're in Utah, because I don't want to drive that far anyway.
But you have to.
But the product is the standard itself. I am getting this right. So you're not telling me what you're selling me, but you want to sell me something.
Correct. So mostly, most of the rest of the article is basically people taking pop shots at them, saying that they probably don't know what they're doing, or you know they're being very big brother. They did interview Ken Mustay, UL's chief of cybersecurity technical services, who has defended the company's position. Our whole mission is public safety, he told Ours. We've been here since 1894. We want to help industry and public use safe products. He pointed out that UL has been involved in cybersecurity space for a decade. They have?
Did they put anything out to back that up? Because when you make a claim, you should back it up.
I work in, I guess you could say, cybersecurity, and I don't remember seeing them anywhere. I remember the occasional conversation of should someone start the Underwriters Laboratories of cybersecurity, but I don't remember seeing Underwriters Laboratory really being all that involved. Anyway, so apparently they employ 600 staff focused on financial cybersecurity, certifying port of sale terminals, PCI compliance, and so forth. That, he said, led us to talks with the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and other U.S. government agencies to develop the technical... You talk to the government to develop the technical specifications. Well, now I know it's shit.
I'm smelling cover-up.
I'm smelling cash grab is what I'm smelling.
It's a good business concept, but they need to say what their standards are so you know if it's worth having a product that meets their seal.
Well, if you're making a product, how the hell do you know what the seal is to build to?
You'd have to have individual seals for different types of products.
Well, no, seriously. If I'm making some Internet of Things device... I don't know, a toilet that orders more toilet paper from Amazon for you. How do I know what the standard is to build to? I guess Cycros in the chat room is right. You pay $800 and you get a copy of the standard.
Well, and of course, let's do it with an actual toilet. There's a toilet in Japan that when you piss in it, it analyzes your urine and sends the medical information to your doctor. So with that... you would need a secure line, or at least a secure way of talking to your doctor. You don't want that being broadcast everywhere.
Anyways.
But they would need pretty much a product-by-product code, wouldn't they? I mean, it couldn't be really generic.
How do you even define some of this shit? I mean, think about it. Yeah, okay, the toilet that's sending your medical information off is one thing. Or, you know, the refrigerator that orders your groceries for you. Again, these are things that probably should be locked down. But what about shit like, I don't know, baby monitors? Maybe that aren't actually going across the internet, but they're connecting to your Wi-Fi to communicate. Or security cameras. I mean, these aren't going out across the internet, and they're not carrying financial information.
Well, it's accessing your network, is there a way for the internet to get into the baby monitor?
Oh,
because
yeah.
You don't want 4chan to fuck with your babies. I mean, they're going to be warped and crazy.
I ruined my Saturday night, Madman.
I'm just, in all terms here, you've got security of storage, you've got hackability, you've got network access, you've got what all does it expose. I don't think I could write, I personally could probably sit down and write a standard. But I don't think I could fit it in a document that I would feel like selling for $800. I'd probably want a lot more than that because this thing's going to be a fucking wheelbarrow.
And then the testing to make sure that they meet that document?
Yeah. There's a lot. I mean, because you have all these security companies now that claim they meet all this shit, and yet we keep finding all these problems. I mean, hell, Microsoft has said they're the most secure for years and bullshit, right? So... yeah, I don't know. I don't know how they want this to work. I mean, I like the idea of there being a standard to build to to, you know, maybe get something going on. But, you know, if it's something like PCI where you're checking the boxes off, it's like, we have a pen test every year. Now we have companies that don't actually do pen tests. They do, you know, they just generate a report so you can check the box that says you have a pen test. Or, you know, all of our data flows through a firewall. We took an old Cisco firewall, drilled a hole through it, put the Ethernet cord through the hole. It's there. All of our data flows through a firewall.
Well, you know, that's where you have good standards, but you don't have good enforcement of those standards. There's not a way around that.
We took the firewall out of an old Chevy, drilled a hole in it, and I mean, come on.
Wow.
Technically, no. You're right.
I don't know. I don't like checklist security because it's usually bullshit. You end up building to the list. And I know I was just complaining about how you know what's in it to build to the list, but you know, if they're going to expect you to meet some crazy ass standard, or you can't have their, which, you know, if you're Underwriter Laboratories, obviously you want something weird or crazy in there so that people have to make a couple of submissions because you charge them for the testing. So I don't know. I just,
the whole concept is weird. My only issue is, what they're really selling is Underwriter Laboratories' reputation that this is a good product. Well, how am I going to know whether your reputation in this field is good if you're not telling me what you're measuring?
If that many people are concerned about it, why not start their own?
And that might be a good thing to do.
There's been several security people who have talked about the concept, but again, it becomes a, you know, how much good is it going to do? Because here's the other thing. I don't know about you guys, but I don't normally look for the Underwriter Laboratory logo on my electronics before I buy them.
I don't look at them at all.
No.
The only thing I really check out is safety gear for my motorcycle, and I will let you know right now, if it's DOT approved, that doesn't mean shit.
So there's that. But plus, too, how many people are buying cheap shit from China on eBay or Amazon? Or, I mean, you think all that stuff's getting Underwriter Laboratory tested?
No.
Well,
I make the joke about the Christmas lights because that's the only place I remember noticing it.
It works if people are going to look for it and care. I don't check, so it doesn't matter. I'm still thinking it's a good idea, but it will only really work if people start checking, is this a secure, good product?
Or if the businesses that make the products think people are going to check for that shit and pay for the testing.
Yeah, but even if you do get one out of China that says it's certified, this sticker is probably counterfeit anyway.
Yeah, it's not exactly a hard logo to copy.
Exactly.
So, all right, next one up is from ZDNet. Senate anti-encryption bill would put a backdoor in every phone.
About time.
So, yeah, this is two leading Intelligence Committee senators have formally released a bill leaked last week, which would compel companies like Apple and Google to comply with orders to decrypt smartphones and their contents. So far, everyone hates it. In other news, water is wet and the sky is occasionally blue. The draft law, dubbed the Compliance with Court Orders Act.
Oh, God.
Fucking hell.
There's already a law requiring you to be compliant with a court order.
It's a court order.
It's called a fucking court order.
Why don't we call it the Government Up Your Ass Act?
Because
that's what they want.
The Gerbil Act.
Okay, the Gerbil Act, written by Senators Richard Burr, Republican from Brain Fart NC, somebody, North Carolina.
North Carolina.
Thank you. God. It's been a hell of a
time. Oh, Dianne Feinstein. When you hear that name, you know it's a wonderful piece of legislation.
Yeah, Richard Burr and Dianne Feinstein, Democrat of California.
She is a
respectively. Respectively, the chairman and ranking Senate Intelligence Committee will compel phone manufacturers and software developers to allow government access to encrypted data with a court order. So, in other words, completely misunderstanding how encryption works, the bill strikes at the heart of the case of San Bernardino shooters, iPhone. The FBI eventually sought the help from hackers on a one-time basis to crack the phone, which we laughed at last week when we said they bought their iPhone flaw. Some have said it amounts to an effective ban on strong encryption because companies would have to build a backdoor or use weaker encryptions in their products. Byron Feinstein said in a statement Wednesday that no one is above the law.
And it's not above the law to encrypt the smartphone. You just get a warrant and produce the key. If the dude refuses, stick him in jail.
Well, here's the thing, though. There is a very serious problem with compelling passwords out of people. And it's
the defense is you're saying this isn't my phone, I don't have the password.
Correct.
Okay.
It's up to the government to
prove that it's your phone. Did you pay the bill? Did you sign the cell phone contract saying it was your phone?
Well, but you could say that's not my iPhone. My iPhone had a red case. I mean, you know.
My iPhone had a red case. When you sell an iPhone, it's registered. So what they're going to do is pop open the iPhone. Does this serial number match the serial number for the iPhone you were sold at your contract? Is this your signature for this contract? Oh, we've just proved this is your iPhone. We are
okay,
now
what about your laptop?
You
that shit's not registered, or a flash drive, or a hard drive. The problem
then
is,
the
once
argument
you make
is saying
these...
it's not mine, the government has to try to prove it. If they can't prove it, you have a case.
What I'm saying, though, is that they're wanting a blanket law, they're using cell phones to get it, and that's going to cover a hell of a lot more than cell phones.
Yeah, how you get around
this
law?
Oh, well, we found it on your person. Give us the password, or we're throwing your ass in jail. It's not mine. Your ass is now in jail for contempt of court.
Easy way to get around it.
All right, Ari.
Put your smartphone in a bucket of water and walk away. Never have one again.
Section 2.3. The Constitution and laws of the United States provide for the safety, security, and civil liberties of all United States persons, and the protection and obligations of these laws apply to all persons in the United States jurisdiction. Point 4. All providers of communication services and products, including software, should protect the privacy of United States persons through implementation of appropriate data security and still respect the rule of law and comply with all legal requirements and court orders. I'm reading from the thing here. Section 3, requirements and provisioning data of intelligible format upon receipt of a court order. So they've also, not only they're going to make you have a back door, but now we have to scope a covered entity that receives a court order referred to in paragraph 1A shall be responsible only for providing data in an intelligible format if such data has been made unintelligible by a feature, product, or service owned, controlled, created, or provided by the covered entity or by a third party on behalf of the covered entity. Compensation for technical assistance. So they want not only to have the blanketed you give us everything, number one. It has to be in an intelligible format, or you have to provide technical assistance for them.
You can't give it to them encrypted.
Yeah.
Would that also apply to Ebonics?
Yes.
Yes.
It basically,
that could be argued as a form of encryption.
It says here, provide such technical assistance as is necessary to obtain such information or data in the intelligible format or to achieve the purpose of the court order.
So, they're outlawing math.
Yep.
Strong encryption is math and controlling who has access to keys. So, they're basically requiring either your company has a copy of every key that your device could make, or you're not allowed to use math. Fucking hell.
I like a down world. That's good. Makes me feel safe.
So they are basically opening more security holes and basically violating privacy rights.
They're saying don't use internet banking. Hopefully your banks won't use it either. And since we've mandated all medical files be electronic, we're now also mandating that everyone can see your medical files if they try hard enough.
So I guess that's job security for me? Yay?
It's going to make your job slightly harder because you have to secure it and unsecure it at the same time.
Don't mind dyslexic. Go ahead, are you?
I can see it now, Morp. See it. They're just going to walk in and they go, Mr. Morp, sir, I see your control here. I'll just get you to spread the legs and bend over the desk. We're going to do a systems test.
Fine, let me drink the entire bottle of vodka first. Oh, yep. use a lube. I request a retread.
So the way I do my file names, would that be called encryption, even though it's not encrypted?
In their case, yeah, because they say intelligible.
It's intelligible to me.
Yeah, but it has to be intelligible to them.
Encryption's intelligible to someone that has a key to it.
It does. It can run on a mathematical program.
It doesn't matter. It says provide such technical assistance that is necessary to obtain such information or data in an intelligible format or to achieve the purpose of the court order. So that strictly means... Go ahead.
What's actually going to happen is you're going to have phones sold without encryption, and then people who know what the fuck they're doing are going to put encryption on these phones, either through software or replacement ROMs or by using personal codes or whatever. And the government and the court will still be locked out, but now instead of being able to get help from these companies, their companies are like, nope, we sold them open phones. That encryption's third party from China. Can't help you.
Yeah,
doesn't matter, though.
And it's probably going to be better encryption than what we're getting on the devices now.
But it says that they have to still provide, even if it's a third party, they still have to provide technical assistance.
You cannot be compelled. Okay, you sell a phone. I write encryption software and put it out for your phone. How the hell can you be responsible for software I put out?
I don't know. I'm just
That's
telling
one
you
reason
what
this
the
is
rules
is a bad law.
Yeah, I'm just telling you what it says in the law, in the draft.
Well, you know, just to add insult to injury, in news nobody was shocked to find out, FBI has yet to find actionable intel from breached San Bernardino phone. Literally, wow. It's a one-paragraph article from the AMP project, Apple Insider. According to a law enforcement source familiar with metadata extracted from a passcode-locked iPhone used by terrorist suspect, but the dude's dead. You can just call him a terrorist. There's not going to be a trial, I promise you. Syed Rizwan Farouk has yet to produce a breakthrough in the FBI's case, though the agency's analysis is ongoing. In February, Apple was ordered to assist, blah, 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 while the Justice Department has never claimed knowledge of the phone's contents. The government molded this uncertainty to promote a sense of urgency in resolving its public fight with Apple. The motion to compel Apple's assistance was ultimately rendered moot when an outside party presented the FBI with a working exploit code capable of extracting Farouk's data. So it was worth the fight to make sure we have turned over every rock we can with respect to the investigation. So in other words, after all that shit, they didn't get anything out of the phone.
I already kind of knew that. The CIA director and the NSA director have already gone to Capitol Hill and said PRISM is shit. We've gotten nothing from it. They didn't quite phrase it that way. They said it was essential to Homeland Security and the continued security of our nation. We just haven't been able to stop a single terrorist attack with it or get any actionable intelligence from it, but we should keep it. I was just translating what they should have said, or at least what their statements meant.
So, we need the right to put a probe up every American's ass to make sure that they're not a terrorist.
They just need a warrant for a cell phone. Give it to the person who owns the cell phone, and they either comply or they don't. Apple shouldn't be forced to make a bad product, or LG or whatever cell phone company, just because the NSA or the FBI want to feel good. I want my checking account secure.
But in the case okay, I agree with you, Madman, but in the case of this, this guy was dead, so it was going to be a little bit difficult for him to comply with a court order to hand over his passcode.
In that case, he's dead. And if you want to go with this specific case, if the FBI was allowed to look at Facebook when vetting people coming into the country, this wouldn't have happened.
Mean that time machine where you can punch anybody's name in and scroll down and see them get younger?
Yeah, that time machine where the accomplice, the one that's still alive, had ranted about wanting to start jihad, her plan to kill people in America if they just did basic due diligence. And this doesn't even require a warrant. She wasn't a citizen. She wasn't in the country. She had no constitutional protections, and she posted it on Facebook. They could have just, I don't know, pulled it up and said, is this someone we want in the country? Oh, no, let's not allow her in. And if the theory of she was the driving force behind radicalizing whatever the fuck his name was prevents the problem, no civil liberties are violated, and it's an easy job for anyone doing a security check to do. It was public. They didn't even need to crack her account. It was public facing. Everyone that wanted to look at it could have. If you want to go with this specific case. But the rest of them, where they might be alive, here's a court order. Decrypt your phone. It's not my phone. We can prove it's your phone, or we can't prove it's your phone. Follow whichever trail it goes down. If they can prove it it's your phone, you're fucked. Decrypt it, or be held in contempt. If they can't prove it's your phone, take it to a jury. Convince the jury it's not your phone. They'll let you go. I'm sorry, a bad guy got away.
Or a good guy was found innocent, that,
whatever.
The data on your phone is irrelevant to their case. Because you do have to show relevancy for that kind of stuff, don't you?
You have to show an idea of relevancy. Honestly, a search warrant, you don't know whether there's anything relevant to the murder case in the closet until you open up the closet and see the dead hooker and the murder weapon. So it's, you have an idea that something relevant is on the phone or in the closet. That's how you get the search warrant. That's what probable cause is. So if you've already got the warrant, you've already shown probable cause. Well, if you've already got the warrant, you should have already shown probable cause. There are people that argue that warrants are a step above a rubber stamp. Or below a rubber stamp, whatever. That they're very easy to get in a lot of cases. But probable cause is already showing that you have reason to believe there's something on said cell phone or something in said computer, or that there's a dead hooker in Madman's closet and we just need to double check. You've already shown probable cause. Maybe a receipt from the hooker I may or may not have purchased next to a receipt from a Walmart for a ball peen hammer that may or may not be bloodstained that could have been found in a parking lot. You have reason to believe there's a dead person there. So you've got a warrant to check the closet. You have a reason to believe there's a plan on the cell phone. So you've already gotten a warrant. Whatever.
To be fair, you've never opened that closet when you've had us over.
And I'm never going to.
I just want to know, you're getting a receipt from the prostitute for
tax purposes.
I thought so. Just checking.
Would I want to write it off. Wow. It's entertainment. It's a business expense.
Yeah, I thought so. Just checking.
And it doesn't say prostitute, it says Al's Steakhouse. You can incorporate any name, and that doesn't mean that that's the product they're selling. You just want people to assume.
So, continuing the trend of government not knowing what the fuck they're doing, U.S. federal, state, and local government agencies, this is from Reuters.com, Reuters. Are we still doing that joke?
No. Reuters, RotoRooters.com.
All right, this is from a plumbing company. U.S. federal, state, local, and government agencies rank last in place in cybersecurity when compared against 17 major private industries, including transportation, retail, and healthcare. Considering healthcare has been getting smacked around with... you haven't heard anything about governments getting hit with crypto lockers. I bet it's happening like mad, though. Just because a lot of them still use IE6. According to a new report released Thursday, the analysis from venture-backed security benchmarking startup Security Scorecard measured the relative security health of... Security Scorecard, really? What, you got a referee holding up the orange card? Come on. Measured the relative security health of government and industries across 10 categories, including vulnerability to malware infections, exposure rate of passwords, and susceptibility to social engineering, such as an employee using corporate account information on public social networks. Wow. Okay. Education, telecommunications, and pharmaceutical industries also ranked low. The report found information services, construction, food, and technology were among the top performers. Government agencies have struggled for years to keep pace with malicious hackers and insider threats, a challenge that comes into focus after it was disclosed last year that more than 21 million individuals had their sensitive data pilfered during the breach at the Office of Personnel Management. Security Scorecard said it tracked 35 major data breaches across the government from April 2015 to April 2016. President Barack Obama has made improving cybersecurity a top priority over his remaining year in office. he's asked Congress for $19 billion to cybersecurity.
That's a lot of money.
That's not... You don't buy the black box. It's a process. You do process improvement. You
hire people to do the job. Partially.
I think his first instruction was, Hillary, go set up your own email server. Okay? Get it off our rack. You know, we got to have it separate, petition stuff.
So, let's see. I'm going to skip the India story for time. Just because I looked at the clock. A couple of funny ones, then we'll do Dojo and Rap. Well, next one is from... Go ahead, Batman.
On this one, part of the reason I think they can score so badly is who else is going to issue you a driver's license? There's no competition.
And that's a problem. I should be able to get a driver's license from the competing government down the street.
Or privatize some parts of government that they might not necessarily need to do. Like education. We were pretty well educated when the government wasn't involved.
Yeah. So, next article is from Torrent Freak. Paramount. We own the Klingon language.
Do they?
Isn't that cultural appropriation?
No, ABC owns the television rights to Star Trek.
The ongoing lawsuit between Paramount Pictures, CBS Studios, and the crowd-funded Star Trek spinoff Prelude to Anaxar is rising. God. I'm sorry, I love Star Trek too, but sometimes Trekkies can really, really go too far.
I said ABC, I meant in CBS, sorry.
Is raising some interesting copyright questions. The spinoff makers argue that several of the Star Trek-related elements they use are not copyrightable, but the movie studios clearly disagree. Earlier this year, Paramount Pictures and CBS Studios filed a lawsuit against the makers of the Star Trek-inspired fan film, accusing them of copyright infringement. The dispute centers around the well-received short film Star Trek Prelude to Anaxar and the planned follow-up feature film Anaxar. Among other things, Star Trek's right holders claim ownership over various Star Trek-related settings, characters, species, colors, clothing, shapes, words, short phrases, colors. They claimed ownership of colors.
Okay.
And even the Klingon language.
Colors, no. Standards, possibly. I could see the Klingon battle standard.
That's
Romulan Republic. That could be it. Yeah. You can't copyright a fucking color. Everyone has red.
NXR Productions and Alec Peters, the makers of the fan spinoff, responded to several of the allegations last month, arguing that several of the alleged infringing elements are not protected by copyright at all. They argued that the Klingon language is not copyrightable because it's not more than an idea or a system. They therefore asked the court to dismiss or strike the copyright claims in question. However, Paramount and CBS disagree. They've got the translation to Klingon, and I'm like, what the hell is that? Bolkbic. It's like, I guess that's the Klingon word for disagree. And their reply to rights holders calls the argument absurd, and among other things, they point out that the language system is not very useful, as there's no real Klingons to communicate with. So, well, now wait a minute here. So, if I'm remembering my Star Trek lore correctly, one of the show's writers came up with the language, right?
Yes.
So, you can copyright a fictitious language, I believe.
Is Elvin copyrighted from Tolkien?
I don't think he ever made the full language, did he? I know he made parts of it.
Pretty sure he made a full language.
Man's been dead long enough, and I doubt he ever bothered to copyright it.
I'm wondering if anybody's copywritten Wookiee.
Well, are programming languages copyrighted or copyrightable?
I don't think anybody's actually... Yes, sort of. It's not the language itself that's copywritten. It's usually the interpreter, but Java or Oracle, not Oracle, Sun at the time, sued Microsoft and won because of Microsoft's interpretation of what would later become .NET, but at the time was J++, which was the Microsoft version of Java. And Oracle has won a lawsuit against Android for parts of Java, but that was for libraries, not so much for the language itself. I don't know that anybody's actually tried.
Is English copyrighted?
No.
Yeah, is Spanish copyrighted?
Also what? Too old. Copyrights do expire eventually.
The only language I know of that's heavily controlled is French, and that's because their government claims...
they only control the teaching of French in their schools. Creole French still exists.
Yeah.
But again, it's also old enough that copyright doesn't apply. You'd look kind of like encryptions are languages. So was the Navajo encryption copyrighted, the one developed by the Army?
I don't think anybody tried.
I know it was classified. But that's not the same thing. Copyright, it's public, so no one can copy it.
Yep.
So here you go. Tolkien's languages are not in the public domain. As the artistic creator of J.R.R. Tolkien, they enjoy the same copyright protections as his literary works, including but not limited to restrictions on the amount of quotations, purpose of use, and creation of derivative works.
So yeah, Klingon could be copyrighted.
So then it comes down to when the guy wrote it, was he working for CBS at the time? I don't remember the exact details. I just remember it was one of the writers of the show came up with bits and pieces of it, and they eventually fleshed out the whole language. But I guess that would come down to, you know, was he working for CBS? Did he make the language under their employ as part of his, you know, Star Trek writing contract, or was it something he did on his own? So does CBS own the copyright, or does the guy who wrote it own the copyright?
I'm thinking CBS owns... I know they own the television rights to Star Trek, and Paramount owns the movie rights, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
So one of those two could argue they own the rights, but it's kind of funny on can two entities own those, and could either of them give permission?
I don't know. That's a little not a lawyer. Don't know. But
I can see that the fan pick. I don't think they should do it because Star Trek's profitability is fan run. So anything that gets their name out is going to, in the long run, be profitable for either of those companies.
Yeah, but it's kind of stupid to sue your fan. I mean, you got fans dedicated enough to make a movie? Come on.
It is something I think they do have the legal right to sue them for.
I just don't think it's wise to do so.
Yeah. I'm going to concede it's not wise to do so, but Klingons, they own the idea of a Klingon. Now, when it comes to Vulcans? I could see an argument on them not owning Vulcans. Vulcans are a derivative work from elves.
You can go tell Spock he's a space fairy. I want to see that.
I will fucking tell Spock. I'll dig up Leonard Nimoy and say you were a space fairy. I mean, I like Star Trek.
I
like Vulcans. They're space fairies. Well, space elves. So I could see that being a derivative work and having trouble copyrighting with Klingons.
So, two points. One is you don't think it's wise for them to sue. So is it, in the same context, it wouldn't be wise then for, say, Blizzard to sue the private WoW server?
No, I don't think it is because it's they're going after their fans, people who are dedicated enough to the game to set up their own copies of it. Now, Blizzard has an argument in that they're not paying subscriptions to play the version of WoW that they have out, except that the big the server we talked about last week, the vanilla one going down that everybody's losing their shit over, it's not the same one Blizzard runs. It's not available anywhere else anymore. Right. You could make a really strong argument that that version of WoW has been abandoned, but I don't think it's old enough for the abandonware argument.
And
usually abandonware stuff goes out, the primary company's out of business too, so.
The profit margin, or the, I'm sorry, the way Star Trek makes profit on Star Trek isn't a subscription model. It is, people are willing to use Star Trek, so they're willing, so they're able to sell advertisements for Star Trek, or for,
Yeah, I mean, this is keeping the fandom of going when there's not new Star Trek material out. I mean, there's a new TV show getting ready to come out, right? So if the studio wanted to be smart about this, instead of suing them, they would make a deal with them in the back room, take ownership of the damned thing, and,
I wouldn't even take ownership. I would just promote it. This is advertising for their next Star Trek show.
Yeah.
But and, with Blizzard, there's not a way for them to make money other than charging their subscription the way they're set up.
Well, if Blizzard was smart, they could buy out that Nostralis server and start charging a subscription fee, and I bet you'd have a lot of people pay it.
Yep, you would.
So
yeah, they could tear off and make multiple, because I really like the Burning Crusade. Wow. The original PvP setup for it before they started doing some tweaks to the specs and stuff.
So, I mean, there's obviously what that shows is that there's obviously a market for these things. There's obviously a market for more Star Trek. There's obviously a market for this version of WoW. And by suing and shutting it down and screaming about intellectual property, you aren't fulfilling a market need. You're denying a market need. For the hope of retaining ownership of a concept, whereas you could, if you were smart about it, you go to the people who are providing the market need and say, "Look, we could sue your ass into the ground. Let's make a deal instead." They're going to be really, I guarantee, if you had gone to the people running Nostra, if Blizzard had gone to them and said, "Look, we can't continue like this because you are violating our IP," come to an arrangement. Maybe hand over the servers or the client list, whatever, and have Blizzard spin up their own, vanilla WoW again, and maybe charge, $5 a month or something for it, since it's not the one they want to support, and they're not going to patch it, and blah, 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 blah. You've also got a team of admins right there who've already been doing the work for free. I mean, you've got a dedicated player base there. If you were a little bit smarter and not so quick to sue, or threaten to sue, you could turn that into something very profitable.
So I just found something on the XNR lawsuit.
Uh-huh.
It's next steps, basically, in the lawsuit. It says the defendant, most of the mentioned items being common words, for instance, beaming, would have been invented long before Star Trek. They also claim the Klingon language is not copyrightable because it is a useful system. And so citation was needed there, but copyright does not protect the Klingon language. The Klingon language itself is an idea or a system and not copyrightable. As the Supreme Court held in the context of a system of bookkeeping, although copyright protects the author's expression of the system, it does not prevent others from using the system. Baker v. Selden, whatever, blah, blah, blah. The mere allegations the defendants used the Klingon language without any allegation that defendants copied plaintiff's particular expression of that language and is therefore insufficient to state a claim for copyright infringement as to any protected element. So, essentially, they're stating that it's no longer necessarily a copyrightable.
It's not a work of fiction. It's the Dewey Decimal System.
Exactly. It's like saying copying, one plus one
now, isn't it?
So is Elvin.
Yeah. But Elvin is protected underneath his works or whatever, according to that other side.
I can see the argument that Klingon is an artistic expression because it's obviously from a work of fiction.
Those, the Elven language. Both of them, they're both fictitious languages. Both come from books. There's a large series of Star Trek books where they fleshed it out in.
No, that's my point. I could see the argument that Klingon could be copyrighted. They're saying it shouldn't be because it's a language like the Dewey Decimal System, but...
But what system is it being used outside of this fictitious universe?
Yeah.
Okay, the response from the plaintiff back to the defendants, what they stated was, this argument is absurd since a language is only as useful if it can be used in communication with people, and there are no Klingons with whom to communicate. No kidding.
I've been to Star Trek conventions. I would argue with you. There are people who only speak pure Klingon.
Oh, that's just funny. I mean,
it was a band at Gen Con, dude.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, I don't know. I'm moving past this now because I want to wrap up. But last story here is from the BBC. You found this earlier. Nice bit of wetware. In a world first, a quadriplegic man can once again move his fingers after a chip was implanted in his brain. Ian Burkhart from Ohio in the U.S. can even move individual fingers to play a guitar-based computer game, so he can play Guitar Hero. The chip reads brain signals, which are interpreted by a computer. It then precisely stimulates his muscles with electricity to restore movement. Researchers hope that the technology will eventually help millions of people with paralysis, stroke, or brain damage. Ian, 24, was seriously injured during a driving accident nearly 6 years ago. Ian or Ian? What do you think? Probably Ian, isn't it?
I'd go with Ian.
Yeah.
Okay. The damage to his spinal cord and left and the damage to his spinal cord left messages from his brain unable to reach the rest of his body, and he was paralyzed below the elbows and left unable to walk. He is now celebrating the big shock of being able to move his hand again after a procedure at Ohio State University. A sensor was implanted inside his brain to read the activity of hundreds of neurons of his motor cortex. It then took hours of practice to teach a sophisticated computer program how to understand the myriad of signals in his brain. Ian also wore a stimulating sleeve with 130 electrodes primed to stimulate and contract different muscles in his right arm. The results, published in the journal Nature, showed that he can grasp and move large objects, pour the contents of a glass, and even swipe a credit card. Ian described the early sessions as like 7-hour exams that left him completely and mentally fatigued and exhausted. You really have to break down each part of that motion and think about it in a more concentrated way. For the first 19 years of my life, it was definitely something I took for granted. After practice, he is learning new movements quickly. Man, that sensor net attached to his arm looks like something that'd be really easy to damage. But, this is cool, though. So, they've basically rewired the dude's arm, and after, all the computer work to learn it, he's moving his hand, he's learning to use it again. This is like Gen 1 wetware, because here's the thing. It has to be interpreted by a computer, and then they're spitting it back out to electrodes to move the hand. So, one, this shows that they can move, they can get paralyzed limbs moving again with electrical signals, which is badass, because instead of learning the brain, you might be able to have the program learn other signals so that somebody could basically drive themselves, make their legs kind of work. So I could see that being useful, and walking is probably well balanced. I don't know, but I could see a lot of computer-assisted motor movements coming from this, or even if you're not paralyzed. Think about the fine motor control you could get of having a computer program assist your regular motor movements. But also
think
that
if that computer got hacked.
Well, then you have Ghost in the Shell. they got a piece of wetware that reads this dude's brain, and they took forever to train it. Moves his hand.
It is pretty cool. I mean, for that, people that awesome. Actually need it, the other aspect, if you're fully functional, you don't need it. I think that's
of course not. I'm talking about hacking it for human enhancement, but
yeah.
You know, the other thing is, though, because they've got it, it's going through a computer program. Well, there's no reason the computer has to send the same signal back out to electrodes on the arm. You know, if the dude was missing an arm, you could put, you know, a nice big grapple claw on there and then train him to use that with the same chip.
Yep.
So, you know, if you do the Bionic Commando thing from NES, but
yeah,
nobody.
That is cool. Okay. I'm not going to go with the NES, but better prosthetics or just moving actual limbs.
Gen 1 Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah.
So. All right, let's do this. Yo! Hadouken! Oh, right, I almost forgot something very important. Chat room. 3D printing. Drink. Actually, I haven't been doing that much with the printer lately. Got it running good, but I just haven't had time to fuck with it. No, what I have for Digital Dojo tonight is a program called Hugen, or Hunan. It's, yeah. Anyways, what this program is an automation tool. What is Hugen? Hugen is a system for building agents that perform automated tasks for you online. They can read the web, watch for events, and take actions on your behalf. Hugen's agents create and consume events, propagating them along a directed graph. Think of it as a hackable Yahoo pipes plus if then, then that on your own server. So you always have your own data. So you can like make it, you know, email you or text you or show, you know, send an alert to your machine if you're, you know, if it's going to rain or something like that. I've been meaning to set this up and play with it. I haven't had time, and since OwnCloud is turning out to be a fantastic bust, I may replace it. But you know, you can list terms you care about and receive emails when their occurrence on Twitter changes. You know, have it watch for shopping deals. Datic the other day had the great idea for using it to build a eBay sniper.
You
probably could, because I mean it's pretty scriptable. I mean, you can have it run JavaScript or CoffeeScript based on events. So, I could, you know, it can push things over RSS, push bullet, Jabber, FTP, Growl. I don't see IRC on here, but I bet you could do IRC. Slack. So, there's no reason you couldn't have this thing, you know, watching for all kinds of events and reacting to them, you know, whether or not it's following news or, you know, taking events if a web server goes down or, you know, maybe watching your Twitter account for a code word to start deleting everything. Yeah, you just tweet out code albatross and all the servers just in case. It's like, hang on, guys, let me send this selfie. You know, you smiling with code albatross below. I don't know why code albatross. That just popped in my head. I don't know. Madman, what do you think?
Raspberry jam would have been my choice, but we have that as a long-running joke.
Yeah, you tweet out raspberry jam and, you know, your car explodes. I'm just... your day in court. They pronounce you guilty. You pick up your phone, tap a few keys. Guard.
Oh, no, at that point, you just need to have your lawyer be able to do that. I need you to hit send because they're not going to let me have a cell phone.
Actually, you could do the whole demon thing where it's watching for events and news stories and starts murdering people. Interesting thoughts. Anyways.
I don't know about murdering people, but it could delete my hard drive.
So there's that.
I don't know. Delete my hard drive and then give you guys the password to my Steam account, because I honestly think those games are mine and they shouldn't die with me.
Yeah, you know. Actually, if you wanted to set up the whole... I have to send a message on Twitter every 48 hours or your data gets leaked to the press. You wanted to set that up? This is the tool to do it. What do you think, man?
Sorry, man. I'm been preoccupied for this whole show with just watching these people get absolutely destroyed. Some do-gooders who were setting up a database on the internet of people's real names and addresses, jobs, employment, and family and relations. If someone had ever said anything bad to you on the internet, then they were going to track them down and put them on this database, and it would be free to access. They kickstarted off 5 hours ago, and their whole plan is now in ruins, and they're being hounded off the internet. All people involved in this company are now being doxxed. Yeah, it's fucked. This is hilarious. Like, they're on top of their actual Twitter account is like, please stop trolling us. That's their top tweet right now. Everything's going dark.
Dude, they should have automated that. and not let the people know it existed. This is just a really intelligent botnet, guys.
Yeah, apparently they were going to launch a database as of today with over 150,000 people on it already for accountability of things they said. Oh, interesting. Free speech wins again. Fuck you all, bitches. It's actually been a really interesting hour watching it. Sorry.
You're fun. So, of course, wrap things up here. I found my old promos block. Listen to the stream while I was working on it. Pure decking every Thursday. Nobody's doing missing dialogues anymore. Take that slug out. Galaxy 15 radio site and the Twitter handles, feedback forum, and the subreddit. That's all I have. Oh, and Artie has a Kickstarter link. I'll include that in the show notes.
No, don't put that in the show notes, man. That's the one that got destroyed.
Oh. Goodbye to cyber bullies and trolls. Socialautopsy.com. Let's see if that website's live.
No, it doxed out about an hour ago.
I just got into it.
Oh, it's live, is it?
Yep.
I was kind of hoping it'd be real for the trolling opportunities. Just have two people having a bitch fight, filling it out on the database.
I tried to get in like an hour ago and it was down.
Social Autopsy. In your words only. Enter your email address to get notified when we've launched. Submit a person.
Yeah, I just clicked on
submit
it.
Submit a person.
Nothing's happening now on it.
Yeah, I can't get in. Keeps timing out.
It's running slow.
Dude, most of 4chan are on there.
Oop, service unavailable.
Yeah.
Hey, you could take your Hunan bot and have it go to socialautopsy.com. And if you ever see yourself, it just starts reacting. It's like, hey, why'd your Facebook get cleared?
What happened, just before the show started, I found a thread for it, and they were encouraging everyone to run around and grab as many transvestites and trannies and start adding them to the website. And so people started panicking. They took it down for a bit. They stopped trolling us. And then somebody took a screenshot of it and sent it off to Kickstarter saying, look what these people are doing. They're doxing people. And Kickstarter took down their project.
Oh, Kickstarter doesn't play around anymore. They take down anybody's project at a drop of a hat.
Yeah.
They used to not, but now they do. Anonymously submit a person. It finally came up. Name, first and last, city and state, current employer, social account URLs, that's optional. Schools can enter more than one. So you can tell the people who wrote this are still in college because they assume that everyone is still associated with the school. Add screenshots. Oh, Photoshop's a thing. I'm actually fairly good at GIMP.
I have a GIMP, but he's not that good. Yeah, you see why it got taken down, man. This is not a good idea to start with.
No, this is terrible.
There is no accountability.
Photo of the user. Okay, we're going to need to come up with some Muslim names. I'm going to need pictures of the ninjas from Mortal Kombat. And we're going to have some fun. Oh, Muslim dating. We got to start putting people's Muslim dating profiles on here.
Barack Obama.
Every politician is going to end up there.
Oh, yeah, of course.
This was not a well thought out feminist thing.
Oh, was it a feminist thing on top of it all? Of course. Can't take disagreements on the internet. How you protect yourself from trolling on the internet? Walk away from your computer.
Point and laugh.
Are you still alive?
So, all right. That's really all I've got. Anybody have anything before I hit the Pac-Man music here?
See ya.
See ya.